You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. Be sure to check out our 1000 Churches ebook at newchurches.com, and that's a free download for you. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
See, I didn't interrupt, and you might notice, listeners, that I have been fired from doing the introductory spiel. So, but anyway, I want to say
it was amusing.
It was pretty bad. Thrive. I just want to say thrive because you say thrive. So
thrive.
I love that.
That's good. Well, let's get right into our question from Priya.
What are the criteria that I should keep in mind while planting a church in a non-believer's society? And how do I start initially to preach the gospel to them?
All right, this is a interesting question because I'm not sure where Priya lives, but it's neat to say, hey, what does it look like to actually preach and plant a church in a society that is not Christian, right? In a society where maybe it's majority unchurched as well, but perhaps in a North American context or globally, right? Not Christian.
Yeah, and I think the reality is the how of evangelism is in many ways shaped by the who, when, and where of culture. So I do think we don't know the specificity of that. So let's talk about some things that we see emerging, from deductions we can make, right? So
I like it. So the how of evangelism should arise from the who, what,
the who, when, and where of culture. That many ways okay, it's shaped by
that's
that.
Good.
Now the message, the gospel message, we don't get to change because we don't own the gospel message, but how that's communicated does, and so. So again, the question is asked in English. So let's think in terms of the English speaking world. What we're finding some trends is that people are finding, for example, that small groups are becoming an increasingly helpful way to have conversations to share the gospel with others. And I think that's her key question is, how can I get to that place and space where I can share the gospel with some other people? So what I would do is build a rhythm of life where you're in relationships with other people, find ways in those relationships to begin to deepen those relationships. If you can create a safe space where people can actually talk some about their things of faith, very popular things around the world are Christian Explored or Alpha or I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff like that. I feel bad that I don't mention everybody because everyone like emails me and their feelings are hurt. But I love anything is sharing people to pointing people to Jesus. So I think the environment like that is essential that we ultimately get people into a safe place of relationship where we can share the gospel with them. I think that's universal, even beyond English-speaking Western contexts, to do so. And I think what's worked around the world is to create, if I understood her question, I mean, she kind of talked about what kind of context or even what kind of tools, I'm inferring from that, but I think that small group evangelism is increasingly going to be that kind of same thing. Now, think about Gary Poole's work, on seeker small groups. Now, again, seekers on a language, I'm kind of was in a different stream theologically, but those kinds of small groups, those kinds of opportunities for ministry, all of those things I think point to really a powerful opportunity that I think in years to come, people are going to look, say, and hear, small groups or something that God used in a powerful way.
Yeah, definitely. Because that small group environment is so key in being able to raise up new leaders, to be able to reproduce yourself, right? To be able to have great conversations, not only in that small group environment, but one-on-one or one-on-two outside of those small group gatherings as well. And it's something that you don't necessarily need a lot of leadership training in order to reproduce. Right. It's one thing to be able to say, hey, how do you reproduce a 50 person environment or 100 person environment or 200 or 500 or 1,000, et cetera. But when it comes to a small group, most people can intuitively lead 8 to 12 people. Not everyone, but most people without any schooling or formal training can lead that sort of group, right? So in that sense, it really becomes that reproducible unit that helps when you are planting a church in a non-believing society.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think ultimately that idea is key. So again, we can come back to individuals reproducing. I don't mean like having children, though that's great too. I mean like individuals reproducing through disciples making and people become Christians and then grow and then make other Christians. I think that also too, That this can become, I think, that small group unit that could be a triad, could be a group of 10, could be a group of 15, where people, Christians and non-Christians, are in conversation together about important issues. I think that can be and is and should be a key for the future for us to share the gospel together. And I think, you know, I mean, different, you know, people, some people use Alpha, some people are not big fans of Alpha, and that's fine because people come from different theological traditions, and I get that. But regardless of whether or not you're an Alpha person, and I friends and appreciate so much of what Alpha has done, but regardless of whether or not you are a Alpha person, you need to understand just how many people are actually engaging in this. And so you're literally talking now, 27 million people have taken the course. Now, if 27 million people have taken a course, that means this is a tool that's being effective. You might say, well, I'll tweak it this way, tweak it that. Great. But get that non-Christians are willing, in many cases, in many cultures, in many contexts, to come together to listen to some talks, to have discussions about them. And I'm so thankful for the many people who've come to Christ through Alpha and other ministries like that. So to me, when I heard her question, I immediately thought of those kinds of things.
Yeah, and the other thing that comes to my mind as well, especially for most of our listenership who there is some semblance of Christian culture or Christian culture used to be a part of that as well, at least in the Western world. I mean, this is a good question to think through and be like, hey, what does your mission strategy look like? Right. And if we were to list off a few resources, we had Craig Ott, who authored Global Church Planting for our Plus members. We did a webinar with him. Timothy Tennant wrote a book. What was that book? Theology in the Context of World Christianity. Right. Chris Wright, The Mission of God. Yeah. I mean, there's Let the Nations Be Glad, John Piper. I mean, just being able to, what are some other resources that you would list out?
Yeah, well,
let me just think through some of this.
Well, I love, for example, the broad table you set there from Tim Tennant at Asbury Seminary to John Piper and Let the Nations Be Glad. And I think ultimately to look at some of the leaders and thinkers of missiology gives us a global vision. I would say on her question about engaging maybe people, particularly secular people, I really like Keller's Reason for God. Helping us get a picture of really just evidences for Christian theism. It's a very broad book. I mean, I think anyone in almost any tradition can use it. And I recently interviewed Tim on Moody Radio about some of his resources in and around this. And it was interesting because it was funny because, you know, I emailed him and I think I texted him or emailed, I don't remember which one. And I said, hey, I want you to come on. No, it was email because I got an immediate email back from his assistant saying that he's on sabbatical, you know, whatever. You know, big important people do that I don't do. So what's funny is then I get an email from him saying no, and I think he copied his assistant, said, no, I really want to do this. I'm really passionate about this. And that was about his new book, Making Sense of God. And let me just tell you, people can find it. We'll put it, if you don't mind, put it in the show notes, Daniel, the link to the interview I did with Moody with him, had the hour with him. But it's called An Invitation to the Skeptical, right? Making Sense of God's the title. An Invitation to the Skeptical is the subtitle. And I think that he's more excited about that than the Reason for God, because I think it's more of an on-ramp to some of those conversations. And I think those are the kind of questions people are having. So I think anything that helps people wrestle through some of these things and really points to Christ in the context of community, I think is a great resource.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. B&H Publishing, our Espanol division, actually published a ton of Tim Keller's books recently as well. So, I mean, even if you're, let's say, in a Latin American country or Spanish speaking country or area, those would be some good books to be able to pick up.
Yeah, I do think it's a little creepy though how you called it our Espanol division. So, but it is. That's actually
because they're called BNH Espanol. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It sounds like you're, I don't know, you're trying to be culturally aware there. But anyway, that's actually what it's called for the Ozone. That's the brand under Lifeway and BNH for our Spanish resources.
Yeah, talking about the Reason for God, I've led several small groups through the small group study that there
is. We've done it in my home. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it's so neat to have the perspective, being able to see how people relate to these questions. So, I mean, those are great resources to think through as well. Now, when it comes to preaching the gospel in a society that's not, that doesn't have kind of that Christian memory, what sort of resources would you recommend there?
So again, you know, one of the things as a missiologist, one of the things we use a lot is the angle scale. And so people are, you know, the angle scale sort of like counts down from people's no awareness of God to a greater awareness of God, to actually a decision and conversion and more. And so, so I think that the angle scale is a tool that at least has been for me super, super helpful. So again, starts with awareness of supreme being, but no effective knowledge of the gospel. That's -8. And then it's -7 is an initial awareness of the gospel. Well, you know, when I first heard the gospel, I was probably at the -3 or maybe -2 that I grasped some of the implications, I was at -4 where I had maybe positive attitudes to the gospel and because I knew there was a God and I wanted to know him. Well, now a lot of people are maybe at -7, maybe even have initial awareness, and maybe have no awareness. So what happens is when you start further back, it takes a longer time. So you have to, and that's why I think, and I don't want to over exuberant this Tim Keller stuff, but that's why I think the reason of God helps you to be aware that there is a God, who might actually exist and how do we respond to him. And then, but then you got to move beyond that. So it's not just convincing some people or helping some people believe in the plausibility of a God, but then it's, you know, not just there is a God, but he intervened in human history. He sent his son to die on the cross for our sins and in our place. And then if that's believed, then how do I respond? Then I got to talk about responding by grace and through faith to receive God's gift of eternal life. So all those pictures, you know, require a longer journey. I think that's one of the reasons evangelism takes a longer time today.
Yeah. One of the other things that I don't know why we haven't talked about it until now, but the whole idea of every culture, is your culture a guilt-based culture or is it a honor-shame culture or fear culture? I mean, being able to identify that and be able to contextualize the gospel in that way is going to be a helpful thing too. So there's a book recently at our last CPLF gathering that one of our speakers recommended. It was The 3D Gospel: Ministry in Guilt, Shame, and Fear Cultures by Jason Georges, that I haven't personally read, but one of our members did recommend that on this subject.
Yeah, it's a great resource for sure.
Great. So thanks again for listening in. Be sure to tune in next time and leave a rating or review for us as we get to 200 reviews on iTunes.